I'm Nkosinathi Ndlovu, and this is Tech Central's TCS Plus. The show is brought to you today by Kinetic Skunk in collaboration with Amazon Web Services. Fintechs choose cloud technologies in the hopes that the efficiency and scalability of cloud computing will give them a competitive advantage. But cloud adoption is no silver bullet. If done incorrectly, a migration to the cloud can cause costs to balloon instead of decreasing them, leading to frustration and even lost revenue. Kinetic Skunk is an Amazon Web Services certified partner offering cloud solutions with a specialization in fintech startups. Donoval Milder, CEO at Kinetic Skunk, is my guest in studio today. Welcome, Donovan, and thank you for joining me on the show.
Thank you. Honored to be here.
Great, great. Donovan, first, let's start with this very interesting name that you have, Kinetic Skunk. Where does it come from?
You know, when we, it was me and a couple of partners in the early days when we registered the business. It was called, we tried to get the name Agile Skunk, because at that time, agile development became the rage. Unfortunately, we couldn't get the name. And so, you know, I just sat down on my sofa thinking about synonyms for agile. And I thought of, energy in motion. You have static energy. So that's when something doesn't move, but it has energy. But then it becomes kinetic energy when it moves. And I thought, okay, kinetic skunk, energy in motion. Skunk comes from the Skunk Works team or Skunk Works from Lockheed Blackbird, or Lockheed Martin, where they would they refer to projects, like research and development projects, where it's new. They're inventing new things, new ways of doing things, new materials, new tools. It's something unexplored before, right? And so Skunk Works came out that how, hence Skunk. All right, so together, Kinetic Skunk. Yes. That's how.
So rapid developments on the move.
Yeah, it's just, it's energy in motion, basically, right? Linear energy in motion.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. All right, let's get into the topic. We're discussing fintechs today. Fintechs are something that you as Kinetic Skunk, as a cloud services provider, you specialize in these guys. Mm-hmm. And, you help them along their development journey at different points. They can come to you at different points, but earlier is better. Could you tell us why?
Absolutely, earlier is better. In my experience, the best time to engage is before a fintech scales beyond its MVP, ideally during the prototype or early seed round. At that stage, we can help them architect for scalability and compliance from day one, avoiding overrunning costs and possible fines being out of compliance later. We can also help them implement foundational security controls in line with the AWS well-architected framework to ensure that they build on the best secure footing, right? And then we can establish tagging and cost allocation strategies up front so that the costs of the infrastructure are visible, and finance allows that. So those are the top three reasons. Mm-hmm. Why engaging earlier is better.
Okay, but sometimes as a fintech, maybe out of excitement, rushing to get the product to market, whatever the factors may be, we've already built, we're in the cloud, and we come to Kinetic Skunk because we're bleeding money. In those cases, what are the common errors that you see fintechs making?
The common errors, there's about four common errors we see. Over-provisioned resources. Teams often launch EC2 instances and RDS databases sized for peak load, but never right size or down, or maybe not downscaling it, instances during times in when it's off hours. The stats around there, this alone, on average globally, can push costs up by 30 to 40%. Right? So, you know, it's quite a bit, right? There's something where you can refer to it as zombie assets, unattached EBS volumes, orphaned elastic IPs, idle load balances, quietly accrue charges. Without automated cleanup, you know, these can amount to thousands of dollars, and in our case in South Africa, hundreds of thousands of rands per month. Then a lack of a tagging strategy and cost allocation, right? Without those tags being consistent, it's impossible to map spend back to teams or products. So, you know, mystery costs go unchecked. And then the other one is ignoring price options. So AWS has something, they have saving plans or reserve instances. And sometimes fintechs fear this because it's a long-term commitment, right? But if you do the further analysis, you know, you can get costs over time to be reduced by up to 72%, right? So those are basically those are the top four, and yeah, we help fintechs not to have to take advantage of, let's say, the savings plans.
Could you just, I mean, your first point was about right-sizing resources. Mm-hmm. Could you just give me an example of that? I mean, if, for example, you're a bank, I imagine that you're busy on the 25th and maybe for the days after that, and then you're relatively quiet. And so what does right-sizing resources mean for an institution like that?
Okay, so right-sizing means you have the amount of compute, memory, CPU, proportional to demand at a specific time or point in time, right? So as an example, okay, let's take banks, because you mentioned banks. So a bank might be in the middle of the month, I think government employees get paid. So those are peak times, peak transactional times. Okay. So you want your infrastructure to scale elastically, right? To meet that that load. Okay. So your cost is proportional to the real consumed resources. Right? And you don't want to have, let's say, 256 terabytes of memory just sitting there paying for it in anticipation of some peak load, when the peak load only happens a few, maybe 3-4 times a month. Right? And so that's elastic there, right? But that comes down to planning or architecting correctly. If you're spinning up EC2 instances and RDS databases and for peak load, right? It means that you actually haven't worked out what your user community does during the day, right? So if you take an app one day only, people wake up in the morning and check what's on one day only. Right, so there's a peak there, right? Then they go to work and maybe check during lunchtime. Okay, check what's in my basket, I'm pay for it. So there's a peak there. And at the end of the day, okay, I'm going to spend my money now, because one day only sent out a bunch of emails to remind you got goods in your basket, right? And you make your payments, right? So there's three peaks in the day for a typical e-commerce app during the week, you know, when people are working, right? So instead of paying, let's say, 100,000 rand for compute throughout the entire day, you pay proportionate to when it's actually been used. So if you don't architect based on how your user community is going to consume your service, right, then you generally just spin up a lot of infrastructure and pay.
You end up paying more. Yes.
Okay.
So let's talk about that. You speak about architecting correctly. Mm-hmm. And what happens in a startup usually is that, you know, people take dual roles. Mm-hmm. Your developer is also going to be your cloud architect, is also going to be, you know, a lot of different roles in IT. Why do you think this is a mistake, though?
Okay. We've seen this happen many times. Senior developers take on the role of the DevOps engineer, the cloud engineer, right? So before we get into the technical part of that, they have competing priorities. Dev's priority is to get features out as quickly as possible. Your cloud engineer is to make sure the environment is reliable and the product can run. And it's going to be up. By that, I mean it's going to be available. Right? And for it to be available and to be at a certain, certain level of reliability takes a deep understanding of network topology, VPC design, secure connectivity, right? So, and the other responsibility of the cloud engineers is cost management and compliance know-how.
Okay.
Right? Whereas the dev, they need to push out them, write code and push out them features. So during the month, or when they, let's say they're doing in sprint development, agile development, dev's number one task is features, right? But now they also have to build the infrastructure in which that feature is going to run. And this typically, in this case, will build the infrastructure to the minimum level in order for that feature to run. But then that infrastructure ends up being production grade infrastructure. It's okay for a dev environment, a QA environment, but production?
Yes.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as soon as you start scaling and that infrastructure gets tested, you start getting errors, you start getting faults.
Exactly. So if the infrastructure is not built to handle the handle traffic or volumes of traffic, you're going to get errors such as 500 errors, HTTP 500 type errors, which means the server is not available because the API is saturated. Uh-huh. The sockets are saturated. It just cannot serve anymore, right? So building a mechanism to queue up those transactions, right, is it's a complex undertaking. Best left to the infrastructure specialists. The devs do come in because their code needs to be, it needs to be threaded, meaning that needs to be able to run lots of versions of itself in a transaction, right? So, so that is a challenge. And when they, when the fintech scales, right?
Yes.
You'd find when they bring in a business such as Kinetic Skunk, or if they even hire their own cloud engineers, that there's going to be a lot of change.
Yes.
That it's going to be change to the infrastructure. Mm. However, if the senior dev is writing code to run in that minimum viable infrastructure, chances are that code is also written to just do what at the minimum. So you end up not just rebuilding infrastructure, you end up refactoring your code as well.
Right. And these are all costs that you end up paying that you wouldn't have had to if you started right.
Exactly. So you pay the refactoring cost, and you pay a possible or probable reputational cost, because now you've made it available to the public, to your user community, and it's not performance, right? There's production issues and things. Right? So, So rather, sometimes it's rather just to, let's call it pay your insurance bill. And get solid infrastructure.
From the get-go. But now you've spoken about, issues of cost and compliance, etc. But does this also cause security loopholes?
Quite possibly, or I'd say invariably, cause the security loopholes. Because again, so when you're writing code, these days it's very common to use existing code bases, so open source packages to support your development, for rapid development, right? Mm. But those packages might contain vulnerabilities, okay? So, if your CI/CD pipeline, so the pipeline to build that builds your code, takes it through various levels of maturity until it's ready to go into an environment, doesn't have those quality gates built in,
yes,
right? Then that can be a problem, or it is a problem. So, okay. For instance, in Europe, you have it's now a legal requirement to know to have what they call a I think it's SBOM, Software Bill of Material. Right, so you need to know exactly what code is in your product. So you, right, okay,
yes,
and you have, and you need to know exactly what the risk profile is of your code base. You're legally required to do that in Europe, right? And pretty soon that will filter down to South Africa. Other challenges are, let's say they opening up firewalls, as an example, right? So when I mean opening up a firewall to allow a broad spectrum of IP addresses to connect to your service, so that you can easily, so you can develop easier, right? Lots of time that is left unlocked. It's left by that I mean the number of the actual IP addresses allowed to connect is not controlled, right? And then, and so that leaves you open to attack as well, and obviously out of compliance, right?
Okay. All right. So, but now this is happening in an AWS environment. Are there tools within that environment to manage costs and optimize them?
Okay. Yes. So costs, definitely. There are quite a few tools. AWS has quite a mature set of tools for you to help you to manage costs. There's AWS Cost Explorer, which helps you to visualize spend trends and identify other cost drivers in your infrastructure. You have AWS budgets, so you can set custom alerts when spend or usage thresholds are about to exceed. Right? And you can configure it, whatever, 50% of configured usage, 75%. So you can get alerted and you can make decisions about whether you're going to leave the infrastructure it is or you're going to scale it down. You have Trusted Advisor. Right. And Trusted Advisor helps you deliver real-time recommendations across cost, security, and performance domains. You have AWS Compute Optimizer, uses ML or machine learning to recommend optimal instance types based on historical usage. Right. The good thing about this is if you didn't right size your EC2 instances or RDS databases up front, right? If you use this tool, it will tell you, hey, based on this 3-month usage profile, you actually can scale this down by 50%.
Yes.
Right? And those are things are readily available. Okay. We mentioned earlier the savings plans for and reserved instances, which if you commit to, can unlock significant discounts over time up to 72%. Then you have Amazon EC2 spot instances. So you can tap unused capacity for workloads and can tolerate interruptions, you know, and you get up to 90% off on-demand pricing, right? So there are quite a few tools available. You just need the the right partner or the right knowledge to go and use what's available
and explore the
explore the problem.
I mean, earlier on you mentioned one of the risks being regulatory non-compliance. Which is something that can end up being a cost for a business later on. I mean, are there tools to also help fintechs adhere to regulations such as the Protection of Personal Information Act and FICA?
So one tool that I mentioned, Trusted Advisor, gives you recommendations for cost, security, and security. Right, then there are other tools, AWS Artifact, which gives you on-demand access to AWS compliance reports, so ISO, SOC, or PCI, to underpin your own certifications. There's other things like such as AWS Config, which helps you to continuously assess your resource configurations against the rules which you have defined, such as S3 buckets must be encrypted. There's AWS Security Hub, which aggregates findings from Config, guard duty and third-party scanners into a unified compliance dashboard. And that helps you to, you know, to do active monitoring on that. Then there's AWS Audit Manager, which automates evidence collection for audits, mapping AWS controls to regulations such as PAPIA or FICA. And again, that is quite a mature set of tools.
Yes. So looking at this, I mean, there are a lot of tools available. Can I just start that again? Yeah. Okay. Interesting point, Donovan. But now, how do you as Kinetic Skunk, you're supporting these businesses to architect in the cloud. They're going to need documentation later on. I mean, what do they do once you're not there? How do you help them, you know, kind of get on their feet?
Okay, so there's two parts of the business, is the professional services and managed services. That's professional services, that's getting them on their feet. Managed services, continuous support and maintenance. And those will have SLAs and SLOs to ensure that if the SLAs to make sure they stay compliant. You know, that will be built into the SLA. And that's how we can continuously assist our clients, our customers. Or we can train some of their engineers to take over, and we go to a level 2 or L2 or L3 support. So their engineers are skilled enough to sort out level 1 or L1 issues. And if they need our assistance, we can do L2 or L3. Right. So, through a general SLA or SLO agreement, we can continuously support our clients. Another thing is, for us, we also need to be up to date, continuously up to date with what AWS is bringing out, new features, changes, etc. So as a consulting partner, it's our job to say, hey, Mr. Customer, you are doing X, Y, and Z. We helped you build that. But now AWS has introduced EC2 spot instances. We can use this new technology to reduce your costs by up to, say, 25%. So as a consulting partner, our job is to bring that information to our customers. And that's a very important part of the relationship, because you will find the customers, they are business as usual. They're running the infrastructure deep into making sure it's available, et cetera. They're sweating their assets. So they don't have a view of what AWS, the changes in AWS, right? So now there's AWS Cloud Gen 1 modernization drive. So let's say if people that went into the cloud 5 years ago, 6 years ago, didn't take advantage, pre-Kubernetes days, right? Or pre-microservices days. They're in the cloud, but it's old cloud technology. Yes. But now we have microservices, we have Lambda, et cetera, right? And that could save much more, reduce costs significantly and be even more performant and more reliable. So it's our job to bring that kind of information to the customer, maybe do a proof of concept with him, demonstrate that this works, etc. Then do things like
money.
We'll do a total cost of ownership calculation, which also takes into consideration the volumes of traffic coming through. So it's not just a cost of the EC2 instance, it's a cost of the EC2 instance under load over time as well. Right? And that's our job as a consulting partner, to bring that information to our customers.
And I think it goes back to a point it goes back to a point you made in the beginning, where you said the customer can kind of specialize in what they do, whatever the fintech business does, and then you specialize in the cloud infrastructure, so you can focus on that for them.
Exactly.
So looking at the work that you've done, can you tell me about any success stories?
Yeah, so I can't name the customers, right? But we have helped customers reduce costs. We've helped them. A telco that went into the fintech space, build out their their fintech infrastructure to support loans, etc., and performance tune that infrastructure. They've also called us in to help them fix up things for them with a tip. We had a, you know, what you spoke about earlier, a software dev working as a cloud engineer.
Yes.
We've had cases like that. We've helped some fintechs move from Azure into AWS, right, where we do, service mapping to the total cost of ownership, to the proof of concept. Shows that it's going and get the, that there's potential savings because it's just a proof of concept, and then we do a larger business case, etc., and then get them migrate them over to AWS, and we do that with without interruption to service, right? So the to the customers, nothing has changed, right? It's business as usual. So so we set up a way, it's just using load balancers to redirect traffic or reroute them traffic, right? So we helped them customers do do that, and we achieved savings, the 30 to 40% savings, but not just savings, increased reliability. Right, so increased reliability means you can serve more customers, right? Maintain and increase your reputation. So they are the pretty hard to measure ROI from reputation. But you know, if your business is increasing in size, etc., and your infrastructure supporting that, you know, it goes a long way to help you maintain that reputation. So
So a quick question on a quick question on what you mentioned about migrating from one cloud service provider to another. And you spoke about mapping. Is that always a one-to-one? Is there always a one-to-one a relationship between services between
It's not always
infrastructure providers?
It's not always a one-to-one relationship. Some clouds have different ways of implementing things, like perhaps a service buses to for traffic or to queue up traffic, right? So you generally queue traffic so that your infrastructure can handle the load, right? You queue up traffic. So there's different ways. There are different ways of doing the same thing. But there are common things: your networking, your servers, your databases. Yes. Etc. And there you could have a one-to-one relationship, right? And also sometimes, lots of times, maybe the infrastructure in the source cloud, right? It could be GCP, Azure, Huawei, Oracle, right?
Yes.
Was also written or built some years back, right? So now if you want to move it into AWS, right? Let's not just do the move. Let's re-architect, modernize.
Let's modernize
as well, right? So so then the architecture looks completely different, right? To what it looks like in the previous cloud or the older cloud that you're moving from, right?
The source cloud. Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay, and so what advice would you give now to fintechs or someone sitting in a university dorm, perhaps? They have this great idea for a fintech that they want to build. What would you say?
Okay, someone sitting in a university dorm got a great idea for building a fintech. I would say join the AWS startup program, right? Because you get access to not just the technical bits or to partners such as Kinetic Skunk, but you have access to people who know how to build a business from an investor perspective, from a management perspective, right? So the roadmap of the business, right? So if it's an idea coming out of a dorm, startup, right? I'd go AWS and startup. If you've already got your MVP, right? And now, and your MVP has proven that there is an opportunity. You've got a couple of hundred, maybe even 1,000 people using your application, but now you need to scale, and you want 100,000. You need to support 100,000 concurrent connections. That's where you bring in a partner such as Kinetic Skunk to help you re-architect your infrastructure for that, right? But yeah, I'd say if you got an idea, you're in the dorm, you're full-on startup, AWS Venture Builder is probably definitely a good way to go. Because for us as Kinetic Skunk, we're there to build the infrastructure, right? But as a startup, you probably want to know how you're going to take your application or your business to get funding. And like Series A, Series B funding. Uh-huh. That's not something that we do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So you get support over and above the technical aspects of actually building.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Okay. So, Donovan, we've spoken about fintechs in particular, and we've given them focus, but this seems generic, like it applies to other industries. Does Kinetic Skunk work with businesses in other industries as well?
Yes, we work in e-commerce space as well. Make sure your site is again reliable, it's available, and your users have a good experience. So let's see. Some time back, I don't know if you might recall, there was Prime Water, right? It was this big deal. So, I don't know.
Oh, yes.
You remember Prime Water, right? And one of our larger retailers put Prime Water made it available on the e-commerce site. Not knowing how popular it is, their site crashed for a few hours.
Yes.
Right? And that is that's like a black hole of cash. Your cash, your unfinished transactions, so many. So not only could they not sell Prime Water, all items that were in shopping baskets already, people about to pay, at not Prime Water, they couldn't finish a transaction.
That's it. Yes.
Right. So how many millions is that worth? Right. So we help e-commerce customers understand how to set up the infrastructure, or we help them build the infrastructure to make sure it's elastic enough to expand and contract based on those kind of volumes, right? And the rate at which that volume increases, because that's also a big thing, right? People go, well, verify that the application can handle 10,000 concurrent connections, which is fine. But what if that 10,000 connections want to connect in the first 10 seconds? That's the infrastructure experience a lot of stress underneath that, right? So we help them simulate those kind of scenarios, and based on that data, build the right infrastructure, right? Or right size, build architecture.
I imagine. Yeah. And I imagine that same elasticity is very important on days like Black Friday, for example.
Absolutely. So I don't know if you know this stat, but every year for the past 5 years, there's about $4.3 trillion left in the basket by the time Black Friday ends globally. Right? Okay.
Okay. And this is because the infrastructure just fails.
Yeah, the infrastructure fails, or they can't handle the load. The infrastructure doesn't necessarily fail.
Yes.
They'll queue up all those transactions, right? But the transactions, and they queue it up, but it doesn't get completed. So those who manage transactions, manage to get through, you can still buy, right? But the store is not selling as much as they can. Right, so the opportunity is immense, but they're only taking a small piece of that. Right, that's for e-commerce platforms that have that built in. A lot actually just crash.
Yes,
right. A lot will go. You know, the day before Black Friday. You know what? spin up five extra EC2 instances to make sure we can handle that yes. load. But again, that is unplanned. Yes. That is not, it's just a band-aid. You don't know if that five is going to actually handle the load, right? And it's nerve. It's a very nerve-wracking time for the smaller e-commerce sites, right? So we help them simulate that traffic leading up to Black Friday. If they have the data which says to tell them how many transactions didn't make it through last year, you can go, okay, 100,000 per hour didn't make it through. Okay, let's set up that infrastructure for that kind of load. And in fact, we will also simulate that load leading up to it to ensure that that happens, right? Because many things break, right? So maybe your application server is the first thing to break. Okay, so you fine-tune that. Then you run your tests again, and your database server breaks now. Then you fine-tune that. And you fine-tune, until you have the right set up for the expected volumes, right? Then we run the test end to end again. Yes. Okay, great. The infrastructure is elastic; it can handle the load.
Yes.
Okay. So that's a part. That's another part of the business where I think Kinetic Skunk separates himself from other cloud partners. We don't just come and build the infrastructure; we actually stress test that infrastructure against what your user community, or are they going to use that? Like I mentioned, one day only.
Yes.
Right. Typical stress test will be, like I mentioned earlier, will just be, can it handle 10,000 connections? But that 10,000, they might be wanting to connect over 10 seconds in the morning. So there's a lot of stress there.
Yes.
There's a lot of stress at lunchtime.
Yes.
Right. So, you know, when you accelerate with the car, you put your foot down, right, and there's high petrol usage. Right, the motor's revving, and then you get to 100 k's an hour, then the revs come down, but you're constant at 100 k an hour. Okay, so if you imagine that 100 k an hour is your 10,000 concurrent connections, but this the big stress came up while accelerating,
so it's right at the beginning,
So, so we're very cognizant of that. So, we help our customers, I can say, take a risk based approach to building the infrastructure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, Donovan, thank you so much for your time and your insights.
Hey, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
All right. That is Donovan Milder. He is the CEO of Kinetic Skunk. And